Hey, what's up? This is Mario with Rugged 33 Podcast. I'm stoked today because I have like lifelong friends here with me today, the Rodriguez brothers, Fernando and Gabriel. Thanks for being on the show. Today, we're also going to talk about just growing up in church and life stuff. And so continue to tune in to what's going on today. Thanks for being on the show, Fernie and Gabriel.
What's up, Mario?
How you doing, brother? How you doing?
Good, good. So, what are you doing these days? We'll start with Gabriel. What does ministry look like, life look like for you?
For me, I'm currently a pastor at Cottonwood Church here in Orange County, Los Alamitos area. I get to oversee our global outreach, which includes all of our mission trips that we send around the world.
And just recently, you and your daughter were in Alaska, right?
Took my 11-year-old on her first mission trip. It was something that I had been thinking about since last year, and it was exciting to be able to experience it with her together for the first time, because I didn't experience my first mission trip until I was like 20, 21.
Nice.
So to be able to do it with her was actually a real joy, to see her jump in with ministry time, you know, praying for people, helping the church that we were with, and even ministering to homeless.
Nice. Do you got something planned with her again?
We're probably thinking about going back to Alaska next year.
Really?
Yeah. She wants to potentially go to another one, but with passports and seeing how that will work, we're trying to figure that out. But she definitely already wants to go on another one.
Man, she has it in the blood, like your daddy. That's cool. What about you, Fernie? What are you up to these days?
Well, I am currently attending Cottonwood.
cool.
Currently attending steadily, you know, just basically back in church consistently.
You're not on the worship team yet?
No, not on the worship team.
He has a good voice. I remember one time we were at youth camp. Me and you, we went to camp.
Yeah.
And then you had to like team up with somebody. And so me and you, we were teamed up together. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
And so then we had to sing like "Unto Thee, O Lord," I think it was.
Unto Thee, O Lord. Yeah.
Right? And then Fernie busts out like straight Boys to Men, like version of "Unto Thee, O Lord," and made us look amazing. But so
not yet. But I might have to talk to Paco. Paco's got to
get on there.
Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, man, just enjoying life right now. I got my brother right here pushing me, obviously pushing me, but not pushing me that he doesn't even realize that he is.
Yeah.
But got the two. Two kids, Alexa, she's 21, Josiah is going to turn 19 tomorrow.
So wow, I saw you took him out to dinner, huh?
Guys. Yeah, we went good. To go have some Korean barbecue, his favorite. So.
Nice, that's really good, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah, well, today's episode, we're just talking about growing up in church, their pastor's kids as well, don't hold that against us, and a lot of times it's because we hung out with the deacon's kids. That was always my excuse. I'm like, dude, we've seen the best, the worst, and the craziest, you know, is with people being concerned. And a lot of times I would tell my dad, you know, I'd be like, church would be so much easier if people weren't involved. Yeah. You know, it'd just be so much easier. He'd be like, Mario, you need to love people. I'm like, I love certain people. Not
those
too
ones.
Yeah. Not too many, but, you know, and it was only as I grew up, I started learning to love people, not just love what we did, because it's easy when you grow up in ministry to be in religion, like really, like you're just going, you're attending. And for me, and I know for me and Fernie, sometimes we live different lives, even though, you know, we're growing up as teens.
Yeah.
You know, we do crazy stuff. I didn't know too much about Gabe. I only know about me and Fernie because we did it together.
together
we're doing dirt, which, you know, I want the listeners to know, like, man, there are guys that are out there. These guys, how many kids, you have what, two
kids.
Two girls,
got
right?
Two girls.
So Gabe has two girls, and what's their ages again?
11 and 8.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Nice.
So my oldest starts junior high in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks.
How do you feel about that, bro?
It's crazy. Like, I'm okay with it some days, and other days I'm not. It's created some good conversations.
Yeah.
Like, she just got her first computer.
Okay.
We got her a little notebook for school. But my wife had been doing research, and actually we did a contract with her. And through that contract, we had conversations about porn, about sending naked photos to each other. Like, we were able to have these conversations, and it's just funny to see, like, they're where they're at right now and their mindset. It's like, why would people ever do that? And it's like, oh no, they do it all the time. And so, but it created a good dialogue to have a conversation we have to prepare her for.
Hey, bro, you're braver than I am, because seriously, that was so difficult for me, for even to talk to Sunny or Isai about. The crazy thing is, you guys know, here in LA, K-Rock has love lines at night. And so I didn't know, but Isai would listen. He grew up like on love lines, you know, like listening to love lines at night. And of course they had like Dr. Drew. It would Dr. Drew with like Red Hot Chili Peppers. So you could only imagine the conversations that he heard on there. And I was like, man, sometimes for me, I'm like, I'm kicking my, like, dude, I could have did a way better job. And then Gabe comes over here like, yeah, we had a contract and we're able to, making us look real bad, huh, Ferdy? No, I'm just kidding.
It's more my wife than me.
Really?
I mean, luckily I was able to jump in on the conversation.
Yeah.
She had already come up with it, and she was just kind of telling me, what do you think about this? And I'm like, oh, okay, like, so we're going to have to talk about that, because my daughter's the type of person, if she doesn't understand a word, she's going to ask you what it means.
Yeah.
So when the word's in there, that was the first question, like, oh, so what is porn?
Oh, dang.
And trying to talk about it in her context for her age.
Right.
So, I mean, we even just the other day, we were driving back from L.A., and we get off the freeway because the traffic, the way Waze is telling us to go, and there is a strip club called Bare Elegance. And so my youngest is like, hey, what type of store is that? And my wife looks at me like, really? Like, right now? And she's like, kind of giving me the eye to like take the lead. And so I had to explain to her what it was. And she was like, shouldn't that just be illegal? Like, why would people do that? Why would they degrade women like that? And I'm like, well, yeah, you're smart enough to see that, but like in the context of you know, the Western world, it's like we got, you know, the whole mindset of getting money, and it's like, but look at the position that they're in, and my wife explained it in a good way of like the three demographics that create this perfect storm. You know, people that are desperate, have no other choice of means, or feel that they don't, and you know, are put in a position where they have to do this, and then you have the market of like people who have the money and are like, I need to go waste it and do this. And then you have other people that are facilitating it. So it's just kind of the perfect storm, and trying to have that conversation with an 8-year-old.
Dude, that's crazy. I remember we were going to Staples Center, and it was me, a couple of my cousins, their sons, and Isai was, you know, he was a big kid. He was, at that time, he was probably about 11 years old. And Spearmint Rhino had girls handing out cards, right? At Spearmint Rhino's a strip club in LA. And so handing out cards. And so I wasn't really paying attention. You know, I was talking with my cousins and we're just talking. And so Isai comes up and he's like, look it, I got a free entrance. I'm like, why would they hand that to you? You know, but he was a bigger kid. And so it would open up. At that time, it was like I had no choice but to talk about it. And it's crazy because us as men, we know we're visual creatures. Dude, it's easy to fall into porn. It's easy to fall into so many different things, which a lot of the dudes that are on here listening, listen up, guys. And so it was, I remember at that point when that happened with Isai, it was just a learning moment, you know, a teaching moment where I'm like, hey, Isai, like, this is what's going on. This is what Anna was able to share with them. And it, and at times it was difficult for me as a, and I was a young dad, you know, it was difficult for me to have those kinds of conversations, but it was also much needed. Mm-hmm. You guys know, growing up on the playground, growing up on the streets, you hear things which are totally wrong, you know, and then And then in that generation where it's just at your hands, whether it's porn or other crazy stuff that's on there.
Yeah.
So it's pretty nuts. What about you, Fernie? Anything in that situation or you want to talk about or you're good?
Not so much in those demographics. Like my Michelle was always, you know, when those things came up, she kind of had a kind of like a dialogue of things that were happening because of her job. Those things were explained kind of at a young age to them, just because she was exposed to a lot of those things that were happening in her job. So
the kid's mom's an officer, a sheriff, right?
Yeah. So it kind of made it easy, but when it came to, you know, just questions and stuff like that, I was able to kind of just chime in and from my perspective of it, you know, growing up and you know,
dealing with stuff.
Made it a lot easier though. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. Totally understand. The other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, that's why I like podcasting, because just conversations come up.
Yeah.
We talked before the show, like, oh, this is what we're going to talk about. And then we get into porn and how do we
explain? Never run
yeah.
that up.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool. Anyways, but I want to talk about how we actually met. And I was thinking about it on the way over here, driving over here, is that I remember you guys coming. It was you. And they have an older brother named Henry.
Yeah.
How much older is he than you, Fernando?
4 years apart.
Okay.
Gabriel and Henry are 4 years apart.
And then Noni?
Yeah, she's like almost six.
Yeah.
For me.
Noni girl, yeah. That's I remember just this little, like, she looks so much different than you guys, because you guys are dark.
Yeah, she's
light skinned. You know, and she's like light skinned. She looked like a little white girl. You guys stole her from somewhere. But she's so cute and still so beautiful. But I remember you guys coming to the church the very first time, and we just like totally hit it off.
Yeah.
You know, we totally hit it off. And so it was like my sister was Henry's age, and they could tell that story on another podcast. We'll just leave that alone. That's not our story to tell. And then me and Fernie's a year younger than me.
Yeah.
And then Gabriel and Steve.
Steve was like a year older than me.
Okay. So so it was basically the same thing. And so when you guys came, I seen you guys, and the church that we had at the time was a lot of our family and friends as well. But it was just cool to see how our families came together. And then I didn't know till recently how even closer our families were. Like, my dad and your parents knew each other before they were Christian.
Yeah.
Before they were. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But you were talking about when you first came to our house, if you want to share with the listeners.
So, you know, it's one of those things. We didn't grow up in the greatest neighborhood, or our parents didn't have a lot. So I remember going to your house, and it was two stories. So that was like one thing that was big. And then we walk in, and we walked into the den, and he had the glass sliding door, and I see a pool in the background, and I'm like, oh, he's my new best friend right here. Like, this, that was something we really got to do. So when I saw the pool, I was like, oh, yeah, it's on. Like, this is where we're going to be all the time after church.
Yeah, and it was, especially during summer days, because I remember we all played football for the same league, but we're all different ages. So we played on different teams, but for the same league. Norwalk Santa Fe.
Yeah, Norwalk Santa Fe Springs.
Yeah, so we played tackle football, and I remember sometimes after practice we would go home with you guys, or you guys would come home with us, and it was just cool times. I was reminding Gabriel that it usually what would happen, it would be me and Fernando would team up against Gabriel and Steven.
Yeah.
And we were into WWF.
Yep.
And also my mom had this like really nice living room that nobody touched. Except for us.
Yeah. That was the wrestling ring.
Yeah, that was the wrestling ring. We'd fly off the top ropes, and it was just good times. What do you remember about those times, Fernie?
Man, just I think it was just a safe haven. I think, like you said, that we all kind of hit it off. Like, I think our parents, I don't know age-wise, if they were in close age, but I just knew that they had hit it off. And then obviously my older brother and Ange were the same age, and then we hit it off. And it was kind of like, you know, your dad and mom kind of took our mom and dad under their wing, and it was just kind of starting to prepare them. And I strongly remember, like, when we started going there, and it was a little time after, but when your parents were gonna go off on a mission trip, and we were about to take over, they were asked, you know, to if they wanted to take over the church. And I just remember explicitly, just I it was almost like an exciting day, because I could see the excitement on my parents' face, but what was coming ahead was accountability. And my parents were basically telling us, like, hey, you know, we're gonna take over the church for Noe and Sue. And I just remember standing up, and I just was like, I can't do it. There is no way I am gonna be a pastor's kid. I was cool, you know, being in the background and just one of the kids, but to be front and center was very, very difficult for me to even accept, because I knew that I was going to be held to, you know, somewhat of a higher standard in the sense of just being looked at. And I didn't want to. I really didn't want to, because I knew, you know, I knew I was going to be bad. I knew I was going to. I just knew it. I just, you know, I was curious. I was a curious guy. Yeah. I didn't want to do it, and I was just like sad, but I was happy. But
yeah,
you know, it was just the trials of you know.
I love your honesty. yeah. No, because I was right there with you, and it was like I lived two lifestyles.
Yeah,
when I was with my friends, and you know, you guys like are my family. I was with you guys and people from the church. I could stay out to the wee hours of the night. My parents didn't care, you know, like they trusted that we were doing the right thing. Yeah. You know, and most of the times we weren't.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and even I had friends from school I would do dirt with. And when I was with the church kids, some of them I would have to live this certain kind of lifestyle, and it was hard on me. It was not easy, you know, and I knew that I wasn't perfect, and it wasn't that my parents really put it on me. It was more of the pressure of me putting it on myself, and then whispers from other parents. Yeah. Because yeah. You hear it.
Yeah.
You hear it. Like, oh, and they're the pastor's kid, and Mario and Fernando, and the, you know, we hear it.
Yeah.
It's not that we didn't. And some of it was true.
Yeah, you know?
Most of it. Most of it was true, but still, they had no, like, hard facts. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't hold up in court or anything, you know what I'm saying?
Prove it.
Yeah, what about you, Gabriel, around that time?
When they became pastors and
stuff? Yeah, just...
Yeah, I think I was younger.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at that age yet where I was doing stuff. But I think as I got older, I think there was a pressure... and it wasn't so much for my parents or from the church, it was actually for my friends. That, you know, I could vividly remember one of my best friends in high school. I don't know what we were doing. I think we were sneaking out of his house. I never snuck out of my house.
Yeah.
But I remember doing it one time at my friend's house where I snuck out, and, you know, it was me, my friend, and a buddy of his. I think it was his cousin. And I remember when he introduced me to, like, his friend or cousin, and we were going to go out. The way he introduced me was like, oh, this is my friend, and he's going to do this with us, but he's a pastor's kid.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, it was the first time I realized that I was being judged on a different level.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
For nothing that I asked. Like, I didn't ask for that.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of like, wait, I thought you were my friend. Like, but that's how you look at me? It was through the lens of who my parents were.
Yeah.
Not through the lens of who I was. And so I think that was a learning time for me, where it was just like, oh, okay, I get judged differently.
Yeah.
You know, based upon my parents.
Yeah. How did you deal with that, Fernie?
You know, I think that the spectrum that I would look at too, like Gabriel said, sometimes it was just you put your own pressure on yourself, but ultimately I never wanted to, like, embarrass my parents, right? Like,
yeah.
I wanted to be somewhat low key, and if I got in trouble, man, I knew that it was going to be bad. But I knew on the outer spectrum, if people were, you know, judging me because of my parents, I knew it was somewhat of a reflection of them. And so I was like, man, like, I gotta be good in some sense. And so that was my balance. Like, yeah, I naturally did bad things, but I would look at it as if I knew ahead of time in order to make a decision, I would have to make a decision based on my parents and like not wanting to embarrass them.
Yeah. But, no, you know. Yeah, no, totally, man. I'm right there with you. That's the pressure that you put on yourself to be perfect. Like, mine would go to, like, man, I'm going to have to lead in prayer. You know, like all the pastors say, you got to lead in prayer. I'm going to have to lead the youth group, you know, as from a student point of view. And so it was that. Or if there was a Bible question,
they would look to you to
answer. I'd feel like I had to answer it. Mm. And those were a lot of the pressures that I put on myself. And it wasn't even so much the people. It was just what I put on myself. And because out of the same reason, I didn't want to embarrass my family. But when I was young, it was like, I knew, like you said, I knew I was going to sin. I knew I was going to do something off the wall and crazy, you know, but it was like, it was always that balance. Yeah. It was like, okay, what can I get away with, you know, or
if I do get caught in the circumstances.
Yeah, what are the circumstances? So that's what really probably even kept me in a safer place. Because if not, I was more, you know, more crazy.
Out there,
definitely more out there and not afraid to be out there. So that was always it. What about you? What about for you, Gabriel?
With what?
Sorry. Just that you talked a little bit about, you know, what would being judged, you know, from another perspective, you know you were being judged. Was there any other things that would mess with you?
I think just for me, maybe seeing the hurt that my parents would go through what people would say.
Yeah, let's
I think
talk
that was another
that.
Thing.
Yeah.
Whether it was, you know, things that we were doing, you know, it's like, oh, well, the pastor's kids did that.
Yeah.
So like, why is it bad for other people? You know?
Yeah,
so I think trying to balance out of like seeing things that they had no control over and they weren't responsible for us like we were, but it was always like my brother said, come back on them. Like it was a reflection of them, which I get to a certain extent, but at the same point, like people have to, you know, make their own decisions and go through things, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be the worst, but it's just that pressure.
Yeah.
That constant pressure.
I'd like to double down on that and just say, I mean, if you would ask me or you would ask Mario, I would say that Gabriel was probably the straightest arrow, you know.
Out of all of us.
Yeah,
totally.
And I want to say it's because we were like the bad example where he kind of saw, and we were the ones getting whipped. We were, me and Henry or me and Mario, we were the ones kind of paving the way to kind of say like, hey, I probably don't want to do that because I don't want to get beat like he did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
And so I think him and my sister had, you know, ultimately like got to see the example, like, dang, like he got whooped for that. Like, and you know, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, Henry taking a
upstairs.
Yeah.
You can hear him hit the floor.
Beating for, you know, taking a magazine, you know? So, those kind of examples, like, you know, you tread lightly when you see those things. So I think, you know, we were, I think I was a good example of being a big brother, you know, in some senses. So.
No, definitely. I definitely got my butt whipped quite a few times by my mom. And it's funny because looking back now, like my friends and cousins would be like, dang, your mom could whip butt. Like if there was anybody. And your guys' mom, dude, she matched right up there with my mom.
Yeah.
It was like there were like Wonder Twin powers activate.
Yeah, man. Like if they took, you know, samples from each other. Like, hey, what did you do? Like,
yeah.
This worked really good.
I got Mario to break.
Left marks and everything.
It's funny now, you know, because I tell my mom, sometimes our parents, and I know sometimes me as a parent, I live like out of guilt, you know, like, man, I'm kicking myself for what I haven't done or what I have done, you know? Yeah. And so when I do this podcast, I have to like remind my mom, like, hey, it's all good. It's not, I'm not bitter. I'm not a mass murderer. You know, and sometimes messing around, she'll be like, well, imagine if I didn't hit you like that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, true.
About that often.
Both good and bad.
Think, I think it makes you think, like, now that we're older, you know, it makes you think, like, man, what was the, you know, as much as we hated it, if we didn't know, like, these are just life lessons, you know. If you do something wrong, whether it's your job or your relationship or just in life, there are consequences to everything that you do. And if you go through life without any consequences, you're gonna think life is, oh yeah, it's easy, but
do whatever I want.
Yeah. And those are life changers. You know, there's people that make life choices that are spending life in prison just because of that one time. Maybe they never got whipped. But the signs of discipline that we had growing up, saying, hey, you did this wrong, you're gonna pay for this.
Since we're talking about whipping kids and stuff like that, how many times did, you know what, I rarely had to spank my kids. Rarely. It's very rare. What about you, Fernie?
Lex, I didn't even have to. It was more my voice.
Yeah,
like, same here. My voice, and she kind of had that already. Like, she knew that I raised my voice at a time. Like, that was heartbreaking enough. I could see her welting up in tears.
Save here.
Sigh, there was a couple times where I had to, you know, just backhand, just, you know, close to him. Like, it was a time where he just forgot his backpack, like, twice, bro. And I was just so frustrated with him, you know, already. But Sigh, maybe a couple times, but not really.
Same here.
Yeah, not like we got.
No. I think we got it enough for them.
Yeah.
It just like carried on.
And maybe their kids too.
I don't know.
We'll see.
No, man. No, seriously. I mean, with Esai, he'll be like, I knew just by your demeanor. He's like, if your arms were crossed and your head was like, he could imitate me still to this day perfectly.
Yeah.
He's like, your arms are crossed, your head's a little bit up, sort of like a homeboy. I knew, like, my dad's going to jack me in, you know. And that was on the field, on the mat, in school. He knew real quick, like, oh, I got to change my attitude. I got to hit that switch. And so I was like, was that good or bad? You know, like, did you live in terror? What was going on? He's like, no, it was, like, just perfect. You didn't have to hit me. You didn't have to yell at me. It was just your demeanor. And if all you had to say, and Sunny even says it, she's like, all you have to say is, hey, like that.
They
knew.
Yeah.
They knew, like, oh, dang, dad's, you know, because I wasn't a yeller or, you know, or anything like that. I'm just more, like, chill. But they knew how far they could go. What about you with your two baby girls? Because they're beautiful, man. It's hard.
I think the same thing. Like, my wife, she'll make fun of me because she'll say how I just have to – my voice just has to raise, and it's like they get all, you know, they stop.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even sometimes the tears will come out even before they even get any consequences, but it's just my voice, or, you know, if I raise my voice. So yeah, we haven't had to really do much of that. Just a little, maybe when they were young, but it was more like just a pat, you know, to get their attention.
Yeah.
More so those things.
I think too, what has helped is just the consistency. You know, I think at least for my situation with my mom, it was more like she let it build up, you know, and then
she can take it.
Then she's like, now you're gonna get it, you know.
All of them.
She's like, that should hold you off for about 3 months, you know. And but for me, it was more like just consistent and not so much on them, you know, just enough, you know. My dad would be like, I would give you enough just to hang yourself, you know? And then he was sure to be there to help out the situation, whether it was good or bad, you know?
Yeah.
And so I didn't just let it build up and then go to town on him, you know? I'd be like, nah, we're gonna go a different route. And that's not to throw shade on my mom. It was just, that's the way she did it. And you know, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. It kept me off the streets. It kept me off of doing other crazy stuff. You know, I still decided to do certain things, but it kept me to, you know, pretty much on the straight and narrow, you know. So growing up in church, share with me the cool experience or a funny experience, Gabe, about, you know, just growing up in church?
I think one of the ones that's one of those memories that's in my head is we all love sports. So growing up, you know, Dodgers, Lakers, yeah. I'm a Niners fan. But
we'll,
I remember
we'll pray for him, huh, Bernie? Yeah, that's yeah.
Hey, this is our year. This is our year. But I remember
they always say that, man. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Like I remember Cowboys. Going to a Dodger game, uh-huh. and I got this little radio that was like shaped as a baseball, and Dodgers just happened to be playing in the playoffs, and I remember taking it to church, and my parents were like, you know, leave that in the car, but of course I didn't listen. I brought it to church. And I remember, I don't know why I thought this might be a good idea, but I turned it on, like, during the message.
Yeah.
And I remember your dad, like, seeing me. He could hear it. Because I wasn't paying attention to the message. He was talking about, like, grabbing a baseball and, like, throwing it. But he was talking to me because I literally had the game on during church, you know. I mean, back in those days, we didn't have, like, children's church all the time. It was maybe for a special thing. So we had to sit in the service. I was probably like 7 or 8 years old, and I'm literally listening to the Dodger game during service.
Yeah, I remember because we were asking you, like, what's the score? Yeah, what's the score, Gabe? Don't get caught, but what's the score? Your mom's going to beat you.
Yeah, and I don't know why I did that, but, you know, that sticks out in one of those memories of us being in church together.
Yeah.
Those are one of those special ones.
That was a good one because I remember that clear as day. We're in East Whittier, Whittier Presbyterian.
Yeah, the Whittier Church up there.
Yeah, that was it. What about you, Ferdy?
Yeah, I have so many, but, you know, I think it's just the camaraderie that we had just all together, you know, all the cousins, all your cousins. But believe it or not, we would sit in the background when we were in praise and worship, and when we were youth, you know, we were a little older, obviously, you know, 13, 14, around there. And man, we would make fun of our praise and worship leader, you know. And whether it was, you know, just
Brother Jimmy John,
or Steve Canestrini.
Oh Lord, yeah. Those things were just, I think we were just being us. But also, you know, when you got the side eye from the parents, then you kind of knew, like,
we're
gonna have to stop. But then, you know, church would end, and then we'd go out and laugh and have a great time talking about what we were doing in there. But the minute we would have to leave, then that's when obviously trouble came because we were going to get it for making fun of, you know, our praise and worship.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just fun being us. But
yeah.
Then, yeah, like I said, there's consequences to everything.
Yeah. So. Well, I remember one time, like, do you guys remember Steve Canestrini? Dude, I just saw a video. He's a pastor. Like, he's an associate pastor. He was preaching. Like, I saw the video. I'll send it to you guys. But, yeah, remember he was the guy who, like, he was, like, this Christian rapper before his even Christian rapper.
Yeah, Eminem before.
Yeah.
But he wasn't Eminem.
No, it was really bad. It was, like, remember? And then he had this one song. It was called The Pastor's Wife. Do you remember that? And so we would always sing it, and then my dad would be like, hey, boys, quit playing around, you know? But it was so bad. It was horrible. Yeah. That one, he had this other one that was like, got to get in the media or something like that. Like, it was horrible. It was horrible. But I just remember Steve Canestrini. The funniest thing that ever happened when I don't know if you guys remember, we went, my dad thought it would be a great, and your dad thought it would be a great idea for us young guys, young people to go work on the church van with
Steve in
with
your
Steve
garage.
Canestrini. There was one time in the garage, but there was another time when we went to Steve Canestrini's house. So we're fixing the church van, young people, with my Uncle Pete's men's home, 10 guys like straight out of like Folsom, San Quentin. Do you remember this, Bernie?
Yeah,
were you there or no?
I remember them just all tapped.
Yeah, that's what I remember. We're all scared, right? Like, so, so we go, and you know, we're always messing around. Ricardo, Sam, you, like, we're all messing around, having a good time. Yeah, so Marky. So they wanted to drop the engine inside the van. So they're like, Mario, get inside the van and undo all the bolts inside. And I was like, all right. And this one dude, like, he was straight, like, Red Ryder, dude. He had, like, the SS tattoos on his neck, you know, like, white supremacist, yeah. Like, straight out of Folsom, right? Part of a men's home, Christian men's home. So, anyways, we're working with them. We're dropping this. And he's like, hey, brother, don't drop anything on me, right? You know, you guys like to mess around a lot. And I was like, oh, crap, right? You guys like to mess around a lot. I could hear you guys joking and don't drop anything on me. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. And so sure enough, dude, it was like slow motion. I was like, I'm horrible with my hands. Messing around with this ratchet. All I hear is ding, 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 and it didn't hit the ground. All I hear is this dude rolling himself out from underneath the van. So we're trying to go throughout the van, locking the doors because he jumped out, right? And this other dude with him jumped out, and they opened the door. We couldn't get to one of the doors fast enough. He pulls me out, and he's, dude, my feet aren't even on the ground. He's like, ah, you... Something like basically like you crapped your pants, didn't you? And I was just like, yeah, yeah, man. He's like, don't worry about it. You get a free pass this time. And I was like, oh, my gosh, right? And but I'll never forget that. But that was the same guy. It was cold that night. We got finished with the van. We're taking the men back to the men's home. And this is when you could ride in back of a truck.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So a bunch of us are in the back of the truck. We're dropping off the men in Pomona. And he's like, hey, little brother, are you cold? I was like, yeah, I forgot my sweater. He takes off his Pendleton, gives it to me. Of course, it was huge. Yeah. I mean, this dude was just ripped, like straight out of Folsom or Pelican Bay or somewhere, dude. But I remember that story vividly, Steve Kenneth Tracy, man. That's funny, huh?
Yeah.
That dude's hilarious.
I used to make fun of that guy all the time.
My gosh. Well, it wasn't our fault. Because he came out one day with like a broom, and he was like singing and playing a broom. I'm like, I remember like telling my dad, why did you let him do that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and my dad's like, he loves Christ too. I'm like, he loves something. But the other story I wanted to talk about was, and we talked about it a little bit before the show. Okay, so Fernando and Gabriel's parents were my mom and dad's associate pastors, right? And they had some friends that were interested in Christ, and they had been coming to the church a few times. Well, that couple lent a videotape to your parents, and it was like, I think it was like some Terminator or something like that.
It was some movie.
Yeah. It was like when VHSs were out. And so they lent it to my parents, and so I remember we had like family movie night, and we're watching it, the movie's ending. So me and my parents, we leave the den, and my brother Steven's still inside the den eating popcorn. And as he's sitting there eating popcorn, I'm halfway to my room. All of a sudden, I could hear moaning, and I'm like, what the heck is that? You know, I take off running down the hall. I could hear my dad behind me running also, right? We get inside the den, and all of a sudden, like, it was that couple made a video of themselves. And my brother's sitting there eating popcorn. My dad can't turn off the TV, and the VCR was up high, like a bar style.
Yeah.
And he couldn't reach. He's trying to reach. And my brother's just sitting there eating popcorn, like, what's going on? You know, he was... This little kid, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. But it's experiences like that to let people know that people are people, whether they're at church, whether they're not at church.
Yeah.
People are people. We are imperfect people serving a perfect God who loves us, has grace on us, right? We all have issues of life. And that's the thing is, like, when I was a young minister coming up, my dad would be like, I want you to go in this counseling session with me. You just sit there. Don't say a word. Don't make a face. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, and I was this young minister, and I'd just sit there trying not to make a face. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm hearing this, or what the heck. And you being a minister, you know, of the gospel, you probably heard things and seen things too. Like, yeah, within the church, mm-hmm. when we're dealing with people, people have issues. Yeah. This is why we need a God.
Yeah, I mean, those are issues that aren't easy. I mean, they're, for me, I was actually a youth pastor for a long time, and, you know, being involved in students' lives and seeing what they went through, and knowing some that were raised in church, some that weren't, you know, I there's one story that I could still remember to this day of a girl who, you know, God would do some amazing things at our summer camps. Summer camps are always like this high moment. But out of those high moments, a lot of times there were things in students' lives that would come to the surface because of what God was trying to do, whether heal, and just having to walk through stories of students. And I think the one that always broke my heart, you know, there was a girl who was raised in church, and at one of these camps basically came to the place where she wanted to bring to the forefront some abuse that she had went through. And I still remember, you know, her fear. I could still see the look and the fear in her eyes of she was about to tell her parents, and her parents had no idea. And she didn't think her mom, you know, would, she thought it would kind of change the way her mom looked at her. So she was really afraid. And so when the news came out to us, you know, being mandated reporters, it was like, hey, we can't keep this in, and you know, we have to tell your parents. And I remember the fear, like, no, like, please don't, like, yeah. And, but I knew her mom, and, you know, bringing her mom in the office and having to break that news to the mom, you know, that was gut-wrenching. But then seeing the care that the mom had for the daughter, even though, you know, the enemy tries to use these lies to, like, think like, oh no, that your mom's not going to love you, she's going to look at you differently,
right.
But to see that actually break in those moments where, in the immense pain that was going on in the room, there was still a redemption story there, and so that's one story that always sticks with me of, like, being a pastor and having to deal with
yeah.
with people's past and mm-hmm. mistakes, and being able to have the opportunity to be in the room when grace enters.
Yeah,
you know, those are cool moments, but those are heartbreaking. You know, as yeah. especially as a young parent.
Yeah.
You know, I think my girls were probably just a few years old. I don't even know if Charlotte was born.
Yeah.
And this was a student that I had a relationship with.
Yeah.
It was a student that, man, she was, you know, she was awesome. Like, you know, just one of those kids that you connect with.
Yeah.
And then for this to come out, you know, years later, but. Yeah, there's moments like that
Heck
you have to deal with. But
what are some of the ways that you deal with those difficult moments, not taking them home? You know what I'm saying? Where it just weighs on you. But, you know, as a young minister, and you know, how did you deal with that?
I think I probably didn't deal with it well, because I would take it home.
Yeah.
Luckily, you know, I had a great wife who we would sit and talk. About it. But I think for me, you know, I think one of the things that I learned was how to get rid of it, in the sense of I used to love to play basketball with some guys at church, and we would go play every Monday night, and that was my outlet. And I think for me, one of the things that my pastor kind of taught me was having a hobby where you could kind of, like, let off the steam so that you're not continuing holding it. And yeah, you know, there's the other things that I probably didn't do as much of early on, you know, of casting our cares upon the Lord,
yeah.
You know, whether that's through prayer and worship. And I feel I probably do a little bit better job of that now.
Right.
But back then it was more dependent upon the physical release of, you know, being with other guys, you know, talking smack,
yeah.
you know, in a safe environment where, you know, I wouldn't hold it. Because there were times where, you know, for a week I'm just down. Like, I can't believe this news I just found out, and I have yeah. to walk through this, you know, process of calling child service services
yeah.
and, you know, doing those reports. I'd have to type them up and send them in, and then check in on the kids and see, like, hey, did
yeah.
somebody come out? You know, then a couple times when the people would go out, now the parents are mad at me
yeah.
because this came out. But just trying to walk through those, I don't know if I did a good enough job early yes. on, but it was probably the best one was the physical outlet.
Yeah, definitely. I think even as men, like, just on a man level, a lot of us, we go through hurt, frustration, anger, and I've only learned how, just not long ago, how to unload those things, you know, and to where it doesn't turn into bitterness, it doesn't turn into other things that could be destructive, you know. I think because before it was like that, I didn't know. I'm this young person, and I just overhear, you know. I know my parents, they tried their best, but sometimes you just hear conversations that really you shouldn't hear. And so,
and there's no classes to teach you. Like, there's not a class on, hey, this is how you walk through abuse. It comes up. Like, it's a lot of times, I think, culturally, it's we don't just talk about it. So, just don't talk about it. You'll be all right. You know? No, that's not actually true. Like, you actually have to deal with those emotions. You have to deal with, well, how do I talk to God about it? Or how do I talk to somebody else about it? So, I think, you know, those are some things that you learn later on in life.
Yeah, definitely. Did you have something to say, Fernie?
No.
Okay. No, I just thought you were here.
I haven't had too many things to deal with like that.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
Abuse level.
Yeah, no, I tell you, it just, you know, I was thinking back as you were talking, like going from like youth pastor, just learning, and then going to like an adult pastor, and the different things that you deal with, the different things that you hear, some things I would carry. And my dad's like, you weren't made to carry that. That's why you're feeling the way you're feeling, you know. But little by little, my mentors, my dad, other pastors would be like, hey, you got to dump that. You got to give it to God. And so even as men, you know, whether you're, you know, dad and husband and all these different titles that we carry and that we function in, you know, sometimes we find it difficult to dump those things. And it's almost like that hot, that water heater. You know, you have this water heater, and that's why it has a valve to let out all that stuff. And some of us men will either clam up or we'll just be like, raw, you know, we'll just go beast mode on certain things. And so I've learned just little by little to really stay calm and see what's at the front of my heart, you know, see what's at the front of my mind, what's really bugging me, why I'm not doing so good at certain times. Then I'm able to be like, all right, Lord, take this away. This is not good. Like, I don't want this controlling me. That's too much control, you know? But we're coming to an end. It's been 47 minutes, man. It seems like it, right? It flies by really quick. I just want to tell you guys, I appreciate you guys. You guys are like my brothers, man. Like, we've known each other for a very long time. We're not getting any younger. Except for Gabriel. Gabriel has a lot of time.
He looks, he's got a few years.
Yeah, man. Gabe looks good. But I just want to tell listeners, hey, thank you for listening. Appreciate you, Rodriguez brothers, Fernie and Gabe. You guys, these guys have always been, for me, they've always been encouraging. And we've been through a lot together. And I'm excited for what the Lord's going to do in the future and for a future podcast. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah,
definitely.
No problem, brother.
It was great being here.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Peace out. Bye.
Bye.